All right, cool. What are you doing this time?
Well, Gary, as you know, if a character that you're playing as in Dungeons & Dragons learned a spell, you get that as well through the dark occult arts that the late, great Jack Chick taught us.
Oh, that dickhead.
Yeah.
yeah. I thought you were going to say, if your character dies, you die. Which, like, I was just, like, rubbing my hands, like, yes, yes, put it in my veins. Give it to me, baby.
Same.
Suck it to me one more time.
No, but I've been working very hard with my solo campaign here, but I've got my wizard up to where I can cast prismatic spray.
Oh, hey! Yeah. It's about time that, like, that kind of spray showed up on the network instead of the other kind of spray. Yeah, my monochromatic spray.
Yeah, we're trying to be a little bit more inclusive. You know, as you know, this is an seventh or eighth level. I said that, and I realized I didn't know. I know it's a very high level spell. The seventh level spell. Yeah. I said that, you're like, yes, he's gonna fall into my trap. No, but it's a seventh level spell. It's a evocation, and it has kind of a random effect. You know, it's a real kind of like wild card kind of thing, and that is how I'm going to randomize this game.
Okay, let's see if my will negates.
Okay, so here we go. Abracaprism. Oh no, Gary's dead. Oh god. Oh god. Oh god. Oh god. Oh wait, no, he's just pretending, but he's holding something. Gary, what are you holding?
Hey.
Oh, that was Opa. The effect. That's all I can say.
it's me now.
He's reciting lines from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. No.
You rolled a 9 on your D8, and I'm back, baby. Ooh, that's good steak. Give me a lobster roll.
What is this character?
I'm Gary. How long can I do this?
Okay. What's that you're holding, Gary?
This is a copy of D&D Warriors of the Eternal Sun.
Fuck.
Yeah, fuck. My name is Gary Butterfield.
Gary, your voice has changed. You're back.
Yeah, it hurt to be other Gary. I'll go back. Like, that sounded like that would be a line from a 1980s drama where I had multiple personalities and you abused me in an institution. Like, but it hurts to be other Gary. You be other Gary and break me out of this prison. Other Gary's got strong go powers.
Well, you're Gary Prime, and I'm Cole Russ. You don't know which one I am.
Yeah, the two. I said Gary Prime and Cole Ross, the two two categories. You can either be Prime or you can be Ross.
Yep.
This is After Suffering, the show where we play bad games that you dictate to us, or that we randomly roll up, or that we choose.
Yep.
A number of things.
Yeah. This is a random one. It was recommended or suggested by JB, and we've kind of ended up in kind of a sticky situation here because coinciding with our WRPG on Watch Out for Fireballs, which is Neverwinter Nights 2, we have a double rock block of Dungeons and Dragons games
on top of the Dungeons and Dragons podcast that we do.
Yep.
And just the regular Dungeons and Dragons I have in my day-to-day life. So
right.
It's like the universe is conspiring to, like, so you like donuts, do you?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, these donuts.
Yeah, it's death by chocolate.
Yeah.
It's death by beholder.
I am a chocoholic. this is Warriors of the Eternal Sun, which is a Sega Genesis. It is the only D&D game that came out on Genesis. So if you're a Genesis trash baby, like, this was your port in a storm. Yeah, and boy, what can you say about Warriors of the Eternal Sun?
So it's AD&D, yep. Right? It's not 2E. I don't think it uses the a campaign setting that I had no idea what it was. The Hollow World,
yes,
the Hollow Man.
Yeah, the Hollow World campaign setting, which I'm sure we talked about at least briefly in that D&D episode we did.
I have no recollection of it. I'm gonna need a log line on the Hollow World, Gary, because the Wikipedia did not shed any light on this.
It's just a very generic fantasy world that happens to be, like, you know, you're on the inside of the world.
Hmm.
you know, like a Hollow Earth kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not very distinctive. Like, it may as well be like Mistara.
Right. It sounded a lot like Mistara, but it was like different tribes of gnolls you were fighting.
There's a little bit of that. Like, if it has anything that distinguishes it, as far as I understand, because there's not, as far as D&D settings, it is one of the less developed ones. If there's anything that distinguishes it, it's like a little bit lower fantasy. You know, there's like a little bit more, it's not quite as high fantasy. So there's not as many creatures. It's more like you're likely to fight lots of orcs and gnolls and goblins and shit, as opposed to kind of weirder, more imaginative things. So it's like kind of Conan-y. In that respect, I mean, you can still have armor and everything, but it's a little bit more Conan-y in that respect. But there's not tons of stuff in it. I think there were books set in it, but I haven't read any of them. So it's that system. It's got a very weird, so it's half first person dungeon crawling. Like, if you're indoors, it's a dungeon.
But also the combat is real time.
Yes. Which is like, man, I mean, so the next week we're doing Eye of the Beholder.
Right.
And so that's the true of that too. So we just have to be very careful. This is like the end boss for this podcast, like doing these two episodes back to back. So it's like that, like in Eye of the Beholder, but even though that version of Eye of the Beholder is different, which is, we'll get to it. So it's real time, like the PC version of Eye of the Beholder, the Super Nintendo version. When you're not in dungeons, it's overhead of this very strange perspective.
Yeah, it's Tibia perspective. It's like that free to play MMO kind of thing. It's not quite like an isometric projection. It is like everybody is just tilted 45 degrees to the left, but the buildings are tilted 45 degrees to the right.
Yes. And the ground looks like flat, like you're 100% above it, but everything else is at a tilt. So you get this, like, it looks like you're looking at the world and everything is tilted, not like it's a perspective trick.
Right.
Like, it actually looks like everything's leaning over. It's very strange.
very disorienting.
Yeah. So it's you and your four guys, three guys like following behind you, and kind of like an impressive, like, it doesn't get in the way. Because they just will automatically pathfind around stuff. Yeah,
they're using some of that, the ooze tech.
It's made of the ooze tech, ooze technology. And as far as I got in this, I played this very briefly when I was younger.
Okay.
Because my cousin had it, but he hated it. And so I didn't play it very much because I was a little too young to, you know, to kind of grok it. When I played this time, I kind of walked around some fields and fought some beast men.
Yeah.
And that's really it. Like, it kind of has... like this game and the next one, it's kind of weirdly impressive in exactly how WRPG it is.
Yeah. Like, so we didn't talk about this. When you're fighting people in the overworld, it is like a strategy RPG kind of thing. Like, it is turn-based and you are either moving or you are, you know, picking your targets and kind of goes in initiative order. Yeah.
You have like a move and an attack and you move in initiative order. And like, it's very D&D. Like, it has fancy magic and it has all those things to it.
Yeah.
I had this weird suspicion that, like, I bet you this game is not that bad.
Yeah.
If I was stuck with it as a kid, as like a kid that was a little bit older, you know, I bet you I could get into it.
Yeah. It suffers from some of the same problems as the Lord of the Rings game for the SNES that we did way early on, which is a whole lot of enemies that really don't add up to much, and not an awful lot of direction as to what you're supposed to be doing in any given moment. Like, there is a very lovingly done title scroll and opening cinematic about, you know, the goblin war and being sucked into this new and hostile world, but that's pretty much it. Like, you talk to some people in a town, they mention a swamp, and you're just kind of supposed to go out on your own.
That's one of the things I think is probably secretly neat about it.
Yeah.
Is that, like, it is very open world. Like, you go out and just like, hey, make adventure in this land.
Yeah.
My understanding is, like, eventually, people in your, you know, your hometown, your kind of home base start turning against you.
Yeah. It's because they've fallen under the enchantment of a worm whose name I cannot find right now.
Yeah. There is an evil worm. So if you like evil worms, you will like this game. So somebody who has, I don't want to toot my own horn, but has probably thought more than most about D&D and how it gets adapted to video games. You know, like if there's an area of scholarship that I have, that is probably one of them. You know, I have a couple of rings in that or whatever. One of the problems with this is the same problem, that a lot of these 16-bit and contemporary games have, is that, they don't realize that in like a D&D session. So like, you sit down, you play a D&D, even a campaign, fights are major things, and you're gonna have like probably one of them a night,
right?
You know, they take a long time. So you don't have that many fights. These things kind of pattern that since it's a video game, they need to have action.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up getting to like way too many fights.
Yeah, and they're way too slow. You have to have action, but also like that. This is what computers can do. This is what game systems can do. That is the most numbers driven portion of D&D, and it is also the portion that I have just the least interest in.
Well, it's something that I can get behind, and it's something that the technology just kind of didn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make it work, like because there are ways to make that really acceptable. So mm-hmm. like. You know, as I love Baldur's Gate, the combat is like lightning quick. Mm-hmm. So like, yes, you run into some wolves every once in a while. And early on, they're like serious kind of tactical considerations. Like you might end up using a wand on a wolf,
mm-hmm.
You know, not to tie into our Animorphs episode, but like you might end up using a wand on a wolf. Whereas like later it just becomes like, your guys will just take care of it. You know, everything moves so quickly that like, it just takes a couple seconds to get through. And it's like very fast. This doesn't have that because you're sitting down and putting in every command over and over and moving your guys and getting them in place, it is just very slow to get through these combats, and there are too many of them.
Yeah.
You know, this is like playing with the DM who like rolls the random encounter dice like four times as often as suggested. Like instead of like you moving from kingdom to kingdom and they roll it once to see what the encounter is, they roll it every, you know, 10 times.
Yes, this is 4 days of travel, so therefore... Yeah, exactly.
So there's four different encounters in the day and four different encounters at night.
Yeah.
You know, because you're just constantly getting like ambushed by like snakes and beastmen and shit
mm-hmm.
in this game. And that's what kind of ruins it. It's like, it's not like I think this combat is necessarily bad. Like my preferred combat is an overhead turn-based kind of like where areas of effect matter and stuff like that. Like that's what I want
mm-hmm.
out of an RPG combat. Here, area effects aren't really a thing. And regular scrubs are way too... time consuming to beat.
Yeah, and also because it's D&D and because it's this kind of thing, you can miss, and when things move that slow, missing is a really, really big deal.
And to be fair, you know, and to White Knight for my chosen genre a little bit, like somebody pointed this out. I was doing research for the other game we're doing, and somebody pointed this out and I forgot about it. Remember how often you miss in Final Fantasy I?
It's a lot.
Like you miss, you know, it's like D&D second edition.
Yeah.
Attack rules, like you're just as likely to miss as to hit. It's really, really obnoxious, and that's something I like. That again, the way Baldur's Gate gets around that is you make so many attacks that like
mm-hmm.
it evens out.
Yeah,
it's very quick.
That's also that's also a complaint about something like a Final Fantasy Tactics or an XCOM.
Sure.
You know, like
sure.
You just miss a lot in the genre, but like how gracefully they deal with that and like how dramatic it can feel sometimes, I think is where you get around that being such a bummer.
And to this game's credit, the enemies have the same constriction, which is a big difference.
Right.
You know, so like in Final Fantasy Tactics, you know, enemies will miss you, and it has that sense of drama where like, man, I'm going to die if they don't miss. Oh, fuck yes. You know, mm-hmm. like they actually missed. Here, it's like the enemies miss you most of the time, too, because it's D&D. So you start with very low hit points, but like you can go through many battles without getting hit, you know, and it's fine because you just find snakes and shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, but it feels like filler in a way that is pretty negative, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. I feel like this is probably not a trash fire.
No.
Like as somebody who likes gold box combat, which is very similar to what the Overland combat is, and likes Eye of the Beholder, which is what the dungeon combat is like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the biggest problem with this as a game is one, it has that lack of direction, which I think is kind of neat, but there's mm-hmm. little defined.
I mean, that is only a problem when podcaster problems, right? Oh, never when it's just too long. Well, I bought that when I was in college, and so I needed to get them as much hour per game as I could.
Yeah.
Hour per dollar as I could. Like, all that could be turned around. Like, that plus side about this being aimless is great, but when you're trying to get enough to talk about in a half hour, like, that ends up being a place where this is really not the kind of game that is suited for our approach
show. You know, an old man problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's also something that is, like, you know, the times there are changing as far as tolerance for that shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like talking to... old network friend Amy Holbrook on Twitter and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're talking about that as a thing, like, you know, and it's a well-worn observation, but just happens to be like 100% true. It's just the like idea that like, man, you know, I do not want to deal with these like ultra long games that have 1,000 encounters in them,
mm-hmm.
regardless of how those articulate. Even if I like the actual combat system in this game more than I'm, you know, I like a tap a tap a tap a game.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to deal with as much of it, you know.
I didn't despise the time that I have with this. Like, so I had no idea this was a D&D game. It came through as Warriors of the Eternal Sun. For some reason, I think I had it mixed up with Eternal Champions.
Which, oh man,
we really shouldn't burn any cast on that. And you know,
yeah, because we will have to do that at some point. Yeah, but, that's a special one.
But when I realized what it was, I was like, oh fuck, and like it was yesterday, yeah. So it was kind of maybe a little bit too late to change it. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Again, it confirms our thesis that the Genesis is a PC-ass system, and they were doing, which is bizarre because also it had the fewest number of inputs for that generation if you're using the standard controller.
Which makes the UI for this a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an insurmountable struggle, but it's not, it doesn't come naturally.
Right.
You know, figuring out how to do things. There's lots of menus and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like I had this like very distinct memory that was like, man, I wish that somebody had slipped me this as a kid, because like at a certain age, I probably would have gotten real into this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like a terrible looking game. The portraits and stuff are pretty goofy.
Well, the portraits, they do doom faces depending on your on your health, which is pretty great.
Those are really great. There's a lady, kind of like sorceress lady, who has a doom face that's really good. Like she has a tooth bearing snarl that I really love.
I'm looking at one portrait that looks a little bit like Storm, but she's got crazy eyes, like you can see
that's what I'm talking about. Like her eyes are really, really good. Like, nah. Like, the weather, is it?
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh yeah, we can't digress into X-Men now, because you already spent that too. I'm telling you, this is the end boss for the podcast. Like
this 3-episode run at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's just we got to finish off. Man, will 2016 ever end?
So we have 15...
forget all the other things. Just the fact that we have this hard clutch of Adric sufferings.
Yeah, no, so, won't somebody think of us for once? Here. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh man, so we have 15 minutes left in this episode, Jerry.
Yeah, we can figure it out. We haven't even hit game facts yet. Like there's ways we can do it. Also, you know, I don't know, the sun's kind of weird. I got nothing.
Helium? Of all the elements, helium. It's the funny voice one, huh?
Yeah.
Weird.
So
you're saying that's called helium because it comes from the sun. Is that correct? Helios, the god.
How interesting. this is going to be us talking more about the game, too.
Yeah.
But the one of the things that kind of, I feel like, validates or backs my like feeling like this probably is not that bad, is one of the best user reviewed game fact games we've ever done for the show.
True.
Like the minimum is four hearts. Like everyone on who's reviewed this for game facts agrees it is four hearts or better.
Mm-hmm.
Out of a scale of five, you know. pretty surprising.
Yeah. There's not an awful lot of like funny writing. I marked one here, but it's like not very true to its D&D roots, but a good old school RPG. And they just, like, for the story, 10 out of 10, amazing. None of the old rescue the princess, save the world, seal an ancient evil, and discover lost treasure stuff. And then they just outline the entire story. Like, they present the opening scroll.
None of that. And here's a lot of that. Yeah. There is that's the next one, too. Fuck, man. the next game has a really good back in it. And this one doesn't. It's like, this is, like, too legit. It even gets the Dan Simpson, who is my favorite game facts writer.
Oh yeah,
his D&D rules pack that shows up on Baldur's Gate and stuff is linked in this, where he shows the different ways it articulates their rules. I don't know if you are. This is a fun fact, though.
No, this is so great. It's
variations and stuff. Like Dan Simpson is a hero.
He gone on to do other stuff?
He's the one who has written the best and longest facts for Baldur's Gate 1 and 2.
Okay,
and Icewind Dale. So, if you're ever end up playing one of those games, which like Baldur's Gate 2 is legitimately great and is worth your time.
Yeah.
He has done the super comprehensive back on it.
Nice.
Dan Simpson is legit.
Yeah, I saw that was on there and like I thought it would be a little bit too crunchy, but this is actually really interesting because it like breaks it down by title.
So you're like, how did this game specifically fuck with the rule set and do things?
Yeah.
These guys like the real heroes, because a lot of people, there's a real hero complex in game facts writing. People really feel like they're doing a, I mean, yes, it is a service.
They make a show out of how onerous the task is.
and how, yeah, how, you know, there's I don't believe in virtue signaling, but like there is an element of just like, I took it upon myself to make this fact for Heathcliff Fast and the Furious, you know,
where's my parade. Yeah.
Yeah. And whereas like Dan Simpson never does that and has done like the best work on this site.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty amazing. It's like him, you know, President Evil, and then Per Jorner, who is the guy who did the really, they're not on Game Facts, but he's done the really, really good Fallout facts that are elsewhere. If you just look up Per Jorner Fallout, and those are just like amazing guides to those games. So just like everything that's possible.
Yeah. Don't forget about CBX Freak too. He's also really good. He does the a bunch of Resident Evil stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yep. I just want to make sure all the faves get a prop.
Yeah. So as much as we talk a lot of shit about Game Facts, like,
yeah. No, it's like there are people who are doing, I don't know, it's weird to call it yeoman's work because they're working on these really high profile, God's like, not that, but like, it's this weird thing where just like there's a tremendous amount of thoroughness and kind of like workman quality to what somebody like a CVX Freak does. And it's yeoman's work, whereas somebody who will do the Fast and Furriest acts like they're doing God's work.
Well, and there's an element too that it's like reflected in the game,
yeah,
you know, as well. So like certain games will support a certain high, like caliber of faxmanship. I said something about this last episode, but like, you're, because we were talking about Marvel shit, but like somebody who doesn't know this podcast and just got in the middle of this and like we're just like having a serious discussion about faxmanship. Like, how badly do we deserve to get like just literally killed by Wedgie? Like somebody just needs to like reverse prolapse us with our underwear.
Oh no! You mean just like shove our own underwear up our ass?
Yeah, like prelapse us or like you know, something like that.
Conlapse, yeah.
Yeah, use our underwear as a condom and fist us into oblivion because we're talking about faxmanship in a serious tone. Like this is a very good game fact. This is a bad game.
I mean, like we're really submerged in it, and it's not just for this. Like it's not just a source of comedy for us. I don't know. Like we spend a lot of time thinking and talking about these. Like
yeah,
you know, like we look at them. There is objectively a difference. Like I have a heuristic. Yeah. Like for a game that I like or a game for Watch Out for Fireballs. Like I know what to look for.
Yeah.
You know, like how well formatted is the table of contents, because that actually that tells me a lot about the quality of stuff that I'm going to get down the line, right?
Yeah.
You know, is like what version number is this? Is it marked complete? Has it been touched in a long time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It matters. Like this is like a window into a separate podcast that reviews game facts.
A separate podcast.
like that's all they do is just like the game facts review podcast. could be a thing because they're big.
Yeah
It is it really matters. It really matters.
It does.
Oh man. Yeah, the Warriors of the Eternal Sun, man. The it is very, very hard to, and boy, this is rough because I'm so out of D&D shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're gonna do this next episode and like I have a lot of things to say about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of D&D digressions, man.
Yeah,
like we literally made ourselves a sieve for which to like pour all of our D&D digressions into.
Yeah, we backed, you know, ourselves into a corner.
We like outsmarted ourselves 1,000 times over for this. Like our own worst enemy. This is hell. Yeah. What do we do?
It's us from a year ago thwarting us today.
Yeah, we need to like go back into the past and consult with ourselves at a young age and just be like, hey, little Gary, make up something funny about Warriors of the Eternal Sun.
you mean like in 30 years? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. What's in the news lately, Cole? What have you been up to?
Oh, nothing good.
Don't say nothing for the love of God.
No. I thought you were going to be like, don't say nothing good. Like, oh, what's wrong, Cole?
No. Yeah. I just thought...
Thank you.
Nothing.
It's like my again. Also, the fact that we've got Neverwinter Nights 2 going on. That's all I've been doing. In fact,
it's amazing. It's like it's the monkey's paw wish, like living la vida hysteria. Like,
I've been watching Terrace House.
What is that?
It's a Netflix series. It is think Japanese Real World, except everybody is super pleasant.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Anybody who's listening to this is probably the seventh time they've heard Terrace House described to them. I found it through the McElroys. Griffin does a show with his wife called Rose Buddies where they talk about The Bachelor, and I listen to that because I like Griffin a lot, and his mm-hmm. wife is funny too. Haven't seen a single frame of The Bachelor, but they talked about this show, and it's like, okay, we've got this house in Tokyo. We have, you know, three boys, three girls, in the you know, like in their like 20s, right? Each of them has a profession. They're all working. They go about their lives. They just live in this house with each other, and like they can date each other or not. They can, you know, talk to the cameras or not, and it's shot very cinematically. And there's this panel of super delightful, not judges, but just like pop stars and celebrities and stuff who like they'll just cut away to that and like talk about what just happened, talk about this conversation that these two guys had about the other girls while they were doing their laundry.
So just kind of color commentary.
Yeah.
Interesting. And, so is it one of those shows? It reminds me of how when people describe the Great British Bake Off, where like it's just comfort and blandness in a weird way. Like, oh, these people are just living a life and you're just kind of watching it and there's no drama or anything. And that's kind of why it's good.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Okay. It would be a slow life television show is what it is. But like the people are super charming and super like pleasant. You know, like you can see the seeds of like conflict, but like there's no producer who is coming in and trying to like sow shit. There are no challenges.
She said that about you. Like, yeah, there's no drama, artificial drama.
Right. And it's very like you're watching people and like, oh, like those two get along really well. Or like this guy seems like he's good, you know, really well put together mentally. You know, like everybody just seems to be like on top of their shit in a way that is nice. Yeah. So yeah, it is blindness porn a little bit, but it's very, you know, it's like looking into a house of friends.
I think that you think that it has no drama, but I'll let you know that episode 44 is called Price of a Lie. So,
yeah, I'm very early.
Done.
I think I'm on like episode 9 or something.
Episode 23 is called No Use Crying Over Meat.
Yep.
And episode 20 is called Scissor Hands. What's going on, Cole? Oh man, it looks like the second season gets pretty intense.
I haven't seen the second, so it's weird. It's like a show that was on Japanese television, and Netflix revived it. And okay. I heard people talking about this on a podcast, and I'm like, you know what? I just need to turn off my brain. I've watched all of my regular shows way too many times. I'm not quite up to Westworld just yet. That feels like a little bit too much of an investment, but I will, you know, put on this and just like maybe read the closed captions, but just like listen to these very pleasant people talk in a foreign language and like zone in and out.
Yeah. And also like, I was really hoping we need to save episodes of Outer Suffering like this for when you finish Westworld. Cause then this could have just been like, I haven't gotten a chance to Westworld debrief with anybody and I'd really like to.
Okay. I intend to watch it over break. So one of the reasons why we are so, and we might as well just reveal this, we're engineering the recording schedule to where we will have 2 weeks off of recording, which has never happened.
Yeah. It's pretty rare.
Yeah.
So we want to be able to do that for holidays.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to go home and Cole's going to do whatever it is people in Cincinnati do. What is going on in Ohio with all the human rights violations going on right now? Again, not to make things too political, but every single time I go on Twitter, there's another really terrible Ohio law passed.
Kasich is a shithead.
He
only looked relatively not like a shithead when he was standing on stage next to Cruz and Trump. You know, like I was just as guilty as a lot of people of saying like, I would be okay with Kasich being president because emotionally, and it's a very emotional appeal, I will gravitate toward what feels like the one sane person in a room, or I will gravitate toward like level headedness, you know? And he seemed like he had an awful lot of convictions, which again, next to those other people, probably fine.
Not a trustworthy curve. You're
right. He's like so he's got those convictions I like, but a bunch more. And in addition to that, it is basically every level of government is Republican. So after this huge wave, basically there is no reason for anybody not to do something really, really bad. You know, and so specifically that 6-week abortion bill that you're referring to, that was just kind of like added on to a completely unrelated bill, and it looks like it's going to pass. I haven't checked, and you know, who knows what happened in the 2 weeks that you know, intervene between when we record this and when this episode comes out. But it is up to Kasich to decide whether or not to accept that, and whether or not to just airlift our entire state and like situate it south of Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. That coupled with the guns everywhere bill.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yes, you should be able to bring a gun into your classroom, because we've never had a problem with school shoot, you know, college shootings, like, you know, as a thing.
Yep.
Woof.
No, it's not like a
national mania that's happening or something.
Yeah, it's not like every single day you're reading about something horrible happening. Yeah, it's it's not great. The only real hope that we have, and I think the only real hope that a lot of the country has, is at the city level, you know, municipal governments and specifically mayors fighting back at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah,
it's rough. The other thing I go ahead.
I was going to say, I can't defend my state. Like, yeah, I love it here. Like, it is a very beautiful state. I like my city a lot. I've lived here for 10 years. I like the life that I have made for myself here. But like right now, it does feel like we are kind of exhibiting the most of the bad things.
It does. It's a lot of news. And it's also, you know, because I'm friends with Bob and stuff, who is an expat.
Yeah, he's very vocal about being expat.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's as bad as he thinks it is, but he came from like Youngstown. Youngstown
is, which is like,
yeah, that's
the Detroit,
a rough
Ohio,
scene.
Like, yeah. So I've got a funny TV show I've been watching, but I want to save it for the next episode because of and Boss Challenge, like, because we're fucked. Yeah. What a hodgepodge, man. This is what Warriors of the Eternal Sun does for you. this is the downside to them getting sucked into the other dimension.
We're left over here. Where did our friends go?
It's kind of shitty that they just got sucked into another dimension that's the same kind of low fantasy, more or less. Yeah. Maybe like if we got sucked into a dimension that was just like the same thing, but with, instead of, you know, like the third largest minority group being like, you know, black people, would be the third largest minority group being like, you know, Puerto Ricans or something, like just like some, like, and not that, like, not to, I'm not saying there's no difference in that. Right. There's definitely a huge difference, but just being like, it being a very similar world, you know, and, but having to be sucked into another dimension to have that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something I associate with, you know,
it is a misuse of that plot technology.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, we have invented a teleporter. Oh my gosh, that's a huge breakthrough. What does it do? It moves you one house over.
Yeah, it would be like if I went through a teleporter and it moved me to Seattle. You know, and it's like, it's definitely different, you know, but it's not like, or you to Philadelphia or something like that.
That's a bigger stretch.
Well, it's a bigger stretch spatially.
Mm.
But it's not as big a stretch. Like, it's a relatively similar sized city, you know, and culturally not that different, you know, like a little bit. I feel like Philadelphia is probably a little bit more urban than Cincinnati, but not like hugely so.
Yeah. Yeah. We're more of a, more of a Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Pittsburgh. There we go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just like move out. It's like, oh, can you imagine living in Pittsburgh as opposed to Cincinnati, you know?
The sports memorabilia would be really different. I would hate, I would hate Cincinnati as opposed to being indifferent. I'd probably be indifferent to Cincinnati. That's a sports rivalry between the Bengals and the Steelers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that,
Yeah, there was some drama between about a ref call and headhunting. The last time the Steelers were here, it was a really big deal.
What do you mean a rough call and headhunting?
The referees looked the other way on some very obvious headhunting on the Bengals. No, it was the Steelers side, I think.
Can you explain what headhunting means in the context of being in a sport? I was thinking you were talking about like draft picks headhunting. Like, no. I'm going to get this college kid to be on
team. That's just called drafting. No, headhunting is like when a coach says, I need you to injure this person as much as you can.
Oh wow.
Yeah, like that is a thing that's what it's called. Like, hey, like, he's going to be a problem for us like down the line. It is in our best interest if you just tackle him from behind and just like fuck up his knees.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it was there was like a minor let's say a kerfuffle level riot inside of our stadium because of that. Nobody came out of it looking very good.
Is this, did you listen to that, stuff you should know about, that concussion syndrome? I can't remember what it's called.
CTE. Like, no, it's on my list.
like this is, I mean, we've already talked about, I've talked about how this gun's everywhere and this anti-abortion law is evil. So like anybody we've lost for that, we've probably already lost. Yeah. You think there's like probably a pretty good argument that like football shouldn't be, right?
Right.
Like given how injury it is. I feel like we've maybe already talked about this stuff, but like
we have. People don't like when we talk about sports because we very obviously don't know about sports. But like when the best argument for your sport is, well, maybe the helmets are too good because we're hitting each other too hard with them and that is causing as much damage, but we're just, yeah.
Like, there's no way to like do the arithmetic for it. Right. Like it is literally apples and oranges where you're like, oh, the joy and money that comes out of this industry versus literally just like people getting concussed until they become suicidally depressed.
Yeah. And you do terrible things. I mean, just
to their families and stuff. Like you become a monster themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just amazing. Like I don't, I like more and more, and I've talked about this, like I've said this many times, but like, I just get to the point where I can't, like if I had to explain this to something that was mm-hmm. objective, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, what a weird world. Mm-hmm. What a world, you know, like,
yeah.
Ding dong. It's me. The weird world. we pay people to dress up in colorful costumes and concuss each other.
Yep.
Oh, and sometimes the leaders of these people specifically say like, hey, that guy break his leg.
Yeah.
Like this person who has a family and like has to walk places and stuff, like injure this guy because of this game. Like it is just, it is so hard for me to conceive of.
Yeah, yeah. And the billionaires who own these men, instead of building their own stadiums with their own billions of dollars or, having them be self-sustaining businesses. No, they get the local governments to build them with taxpayer money and don't actually let any of the money that comes into the stadium really go back to the cities that it comes into. Like no level of this is actually defensible.
Well, and then in the college, like I've talked about before, in the college level, like, constantly dealing with like, oh, we can't pay people in our department, but mm-hmm. we just hire this new coach.
Yeah.
On the off chance they might be good enough to get us this, you know,
because the integrity of the sport, it's important that we maintain the integrity of the sport by them being amateur athletes.
Yes. Yeah. At the expense of the integrity of learning at the university.
Yeah.
You know, it is just it is a thing that I will never really understand. And like everything that I say that I don't understand, like I, something that's been happening a lot. And just to save this episode from complete, banality, I guess, is that, so since in this political climate that I'm in, that where it's like, I'm feeling very insecure and scared a lot of the time, I've been really into this, like, I want to understand, you know, like if there's a side, which mm-hmm. like there shouldn't be, but like, if you think of it in those terms, like I want to understand,
yeah,
I want to understand what like the reasonable person. You know, because not everybody who supports, I think some people have been like, when they've written angry emails to us, they've been like, you guys are not inclusive because you think everybody who is conservative is evil. I don't think that at all, but I do want to, I want to understand that. And it's really hard to actually get that, like get a reasonable discussion where it's like, where I can actually parse out, like, what's the difference between my outlook and your outlook mm-hmm. without, the kind of resorting to either, kind of ad hominem attacks or, these kind of abstractions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was like, what happened is such a shock. We had it so wrong. That's a reasonable response, I think, is to want to stop, work it a little bit slower and take a second deeper look at it.
And it's something I've always wanted, I always have that urge, but I have it more now,
mm-hmm.
I've just kind of, and it's the same thing with the sports thing. Like if somebody can make that argument to me, mm-hmm. like I want to hear it. Like I want to hear the argument that's like, oh, this actually makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, that like, yeah. it is good and makes sense that, you know, this kind of concussion blood sport is like how we do these things. And I can't conceive of one. It doesn't mean I think that's people who make that as bad. I just want to know.
And the tricky part, the argument for whether or not this thing should exist is up against the argument of why this thing is enjoyable to watch or why this is a good, why it's good.
Sure.
You know,
and like I get that part more. Like that's something I wouldn't have gotten when I was younger, but as I get older, like I understand sports more,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I understand the appreciation of it significantly more.
Yeah.
With still not feeling like it's worth the cost of what we spend when mm-hmm. I read about stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or in the case of like the college thing, experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So like the what I would like, if like a very bland superpower I would love to have would be able, or maybe I just need to, you know, I need,
you just need different friends.
That's what I was going to say, but it's like, I've tried that. Like when I've had people who I've talked to, it doesn't go well. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't go as well as I want to. And possibly my fault. I feel like it's not my fault, but I could be totally wrong about that. Mm-hmm. Where I just want somebody who's like, can you explain this to me? And like, you know, explain to me, like, I know you're not evil. Explain to me what the idea is here.
Yeah.
You know, and what's the non-evil version of this? And so we've got a little bit of that on Slack. Like there are a couple of people. It's rare. Like it is a very left-leaning community, but there are some conservative people on Slack where I've managed to have that kind of conversation with them.
Yeah.
And it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that like, but when people who are just like, oh, you know, the problem with both sides of the political spectrum is they're in a bubble. Like getting out of that bubble is not something that is just something you just choose to do. And like, hey, now I'm out of the bubble.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who are, there is like non-additive information out there. It's not like I'm going to go like, oh, the way to get out of this bubble is to read some Breitbart stories.
Yeah. It's not to go directly into another bubble, you know?
Yes, exactly. It is not that. It's like, I need an ambassador.
Yeah.
You know, and like that, I would love to have the power to just have like a computer that like explain this stuff to me, you know? And sports aren't a political issue. Like that, it's for a lot of anything like, I don't understand. I want the best. It can be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Apple versus Android or whatever. Like people will turn it into that. Like that,
yeah.
Like it, you know, that's what that conversation can become if you're not careful about it, because eventually it all gets back to like mindfulness. And are you thinking of like the consequences of these decisions that you're making, or these allegiances that are, you know, that you're forming, or like what you're allowing to happen, you know, like just everything gets back to, if not politics, something that is like very political. Yeah. You know,
because as somebody like as part of this urge that I've had to like, I need to understand what happened and understand these people who are not evil, who, you know, support this guy and support this stuff. So I've been like, I'll read comments for things, which is, you know, classic, you know, you don't do that, but I've been like, okay, let's take a look at it. And see what these people actually think. And it is exclusively, you know, is our president-elect will do something, against the best interest of the American people. Somebody will posit that. And the people who dissent, it is entirely like, you know, your team would have done this. Your team is bad.
Yeah.
You know, it is like exclusively teamsmanship. It has nothing to do with answering the original issue.
Yep. And because of the venue, it's probably done in some kind of weird bastardized version of chant speak. Yeah.
Sure. Like there's a lot of that. Yeah. Yeah. Or it's either that, if it's on, you know, Facebook with links to like shitty, you know, freedomeagle.doubleclick.facenews, you know, .co. or something like that, or it's in Twitter, so there's no room for actual articulation. But I would even just a link where it'd just be like, oh, I don't think this is bad because of this, and then it would be a link to like a theory that the president-elect could be working under to make it make sense.
Yeah,
you know, like how is this sold to you? You know, like I know why Paul Ryan wants to cut food stamps,
right?
But why? How did he sell that to you? You know, like how? Like why? What is the part of your morality that makes that sound like a good idea? Mm-hmm. You know?
It's something where one of the best things for me about going to college and moving away from home was being acquainted with a more diverse group of people. I think that can only make your life better, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is getting to know people from a lot of different walks of life. You know, this is an area where a little bit more diversity would actually be really good for me. You know, like versions of these opinions that are not carried by family and thus, you know, are kind of encoded and
there's
kind
no
of like
baggage.
hard, you know, encoded with the relationship and the power disparity, you know, of, you know, growing up with them. You know, it's hard.
You could possibly suggest something without it being a personal attack.
Right.
You know, like it's not you disowning your family if you reject the idea.
Yeah.
You know,
I've gotten close to having conversations like that with my grandma, who is conservative, but very reasonable when you can break it down. Like I actually got her to understand the trans bathroom issue, I think.
Well, that's congratulations, man. Yeah. Like that's, you know, cause again, like the I know why, like the actual psychology behind why a conservative politician might not like that is a bigotry, but there are people who I don't feel like are bigoted and like, the idea, how is it sold to them? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, did you get any insight as to, and I'm, you know, using your grandma as a specific example, why not using it to villainize her in any way, but why she was under that impression beforehand. Like, what is, like, I don't understand what, like, she'd be, what she's scared of.
Yeah. So she is, it was couched in, oh man, I feel really bad talking about my family.
You don't have to, you can pull the ripcord on this.
I'll probably pull the ripcord on it. It was the argument that you see about, like, concern for kids. You know, and it's like, you know, it was actually fairly easy to tell her why those bills don't do anything and actively harm people who are otherwise at risk, you know.
Yeah.
Who already have enough stat against them without, like, new laws enforcing which bathrooms you can go into.
100, yeah. Yeah.
And
good on you for doing so, you know.
Yeah. I had help from Chris too. Like Chris was there. So
But anyway, so the that's been a thing. The worst one that I saw, and just, now we're running long, and we had intended to run short, but you know, maybe this just to give it but the worst thing I had seen was somebody was talking about Sharia law mm-hmm. On Facebook, and they were like, it was like the, you know, freedomeagle.doubleclick, like, shitty Facebook fake news thing. Yeah. And it was like, you know, 53% of Muslims in America want U.S. law replaced with Sharia law. And the comments on it, and it was like these interviews with Muslim people, and they were just like, yes, like, you know, I believe in Sharia law, because that's their religion. Like, that's, you know, and the comments were all people who had somehow gotten under the impression that, like, it would hermit crab its way into our laws. Mm-hmm. Like, it would just be what we had instead of the entirety of U.S. law.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we just have one or the other, and we would just slot in this other religion, you know, this religion's laws instead of our laws.
Right.
Which, like, one, like, how do you get that impression, you know? But two, like, the argument, the other thing about it, where they'd be like, oh, well, that's their laws just come from a person, whereas the Constitution comes from God. And I'm like, the Constitution comes from God.
Like, yeah, cool, yeah, no, what? Like, just like, well, that, so that gets tricky, because, yeah. You know, first off, boy, oh boy, this is not a conversation I want to invite. Second off, they're talking about being afraid that their theocracy will be replaced with or augmented by another theocracy. And on top of that, it's fatwa envy. You know, like, why can't we be as quote unquote barbaric as we perceive them to be?
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Like, why do they get to do that when we've been trying and failing for years? You know?
Yeah. It's just a mindset that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Like, even if it, am I most sympathetic to people who are more religious than I am?
Yeah.
You know, like that idea that, like, oh, like, it's an extra step. Like, being the step to be like, I believe in this higher power and it informs things is one step. The next step to be like everyone else who believes in a different higher power is like a fucking idiot and being fooled.
Yeah.
Is a step that I think is where it becomes harmful and awful and, like,
yeah.
Where biases that I have, which, like, I'll admit that I have, like, that's, they come from that. And you don't judge anybody by the worst of their people, any group mm-hmm. by the worst of their examples. But, like, that's where some of, like, you know, if people get infuriated about my perspective about that stuff, that's where some of it comes from.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're seeing because of where you're living your life. And if you talk to any number of people around you, they would either express a more moderate version of that or maybe the same thing, you know, if you got enough beers into them. Yeah.
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 Fucking A, man. All these warriors of the eternal sun.
We should probably stop.
Yeah, it's probably good enough. I was just happy to have something to talk about when I couldn't talk about this milk toast game.
So thank you, JB.
Yeah, thanks, JB. If you like this show, and honestly, you know, God bless you. Please go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and drop us a couple bucks a month.
Yeah.
You can dictate games at a certain level at $25 a month. And you can suggest games at anything, and you can be the change you want to see in the world. If you're like, these guys have had enough D&D, you can dictate non-D&D, and you can also suggest non-D&D to thin out that pool.
Yeah. So, thin out that already very diluted and adverse pool.
I love D&D. Like, it's not like, you know, but it's just, oof. what else can they do, Cole?
They can like us on Facebook and leave rings and reviews on iTunes. I forget if you already said that.
I have not.
Okay. All of that's good.
Yeah. 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 So until next time, who is
Blink Dog?
Blink Dog? That's pretty good. But now what do we do next time?
Moondog?
Moondog, yeah. Blink Dog, Moondog, Death Dog.